Moncrief on News Talk.
So I've been going through thousands of pages of these documents, and I noticed that one of your recommendations in the aftermath of this crash was to teach first officers to assertively voice their concerns. You recommended role-playing exercises.
Right.
Should be done, and that they should be required by the FAA.
Right.
But the FAA
said no.
And this was 15 years ago, and since this point, nothing's been done.
And it might take another 15.
I do have some experience with creating elaborate role-playing scenarios.
That's The Rehearsal, the second series. You can stream now on Sky Comedy and Now TV. James Dempsey joins us once again. Afternoon, James.
Afternoon to you, Sean.
You better explain like the premise of what is a rather strange show.
Have you got 20 minutes? So basically, The Rehearsal is a comedy spun out from Nathan Fielder's original TV show, which was called Nathan For You. And in Nathan For You, he had much less of a budget, but as equally creative ambitions. He would meet members of the public who were going through some sort of problem and come up with an increasingly outlandish and comic and bizarre and cringy way to solve their problem. The most famous one is probably when he created a cafe that was called Dumb Starbucks beside a normal Starbucks. And The Rehearsal season one debuted 3 years ago to a lot of critical acclaim and involved Nathan creating these incredibly elaborate scenarios where people could rehearse how they would respond over and over again to different aspects of their life. And this was actually a result of what happened when he used to try doing this during his Nathan For You days and found it never helped at all. And he thought it would be a good way to mine a bit of comedic gold from it. Now, you can pretty much bypass season one, although it is definitely worth watching, because season two is not too connected to it in terms of, you know, plotting or anything. Season two opens with Nathan discovering that in the 3 years since the first season debuted, he has become increasingly interested in air travel and particularly in air accidents, and how he has this theory that a lot of air accidents are caused by co-pilots not feeling confident enough to question or to take to task the pilot sitting beside them, and that there are these report, you know, black box footage or, you know, recordings of times where a co-pilot could have saved the day, but they just lacked the courage to speak up over someone their senior. And he wants to create an elaborate rehearsal to help solve this problem. And that involves him doing many, many things, one of which is rebuilding an entire airport so that people can practice sort of walking through a terminal and how to interact with people who work at the, you know, fast food stands at the airport, or how pilots interact with each other in the half hour before their flight or so on. It also involves a huge recreation of, you know, the miracle on the Hudson, where Sullenberger landed the plane on the Hudson, and the connection that may or may not have to the Evanescence, to the band Evanescence, and increasingly outlandish and bizarre things, some of which I think would constitute as a spoiler. And if you haven't heard what they are yet, you're better off knowing, because the audacity is kind of the word I would use here. The audacity of the scope of this show is absolutely incredible. In six episodes, you know, the thing I spend most of my time wondering is, what exactly is the budget on this show? Because the amount of money being spent on this kind of cringe comedy is kind of jaw-dropping, while also at the same time they're running this American Idol style competition show where they're only using songs like Auld Lang Syne and Amazing Grace so that they don't have to pay any of the royalties on it. It is a very bizarre, odd show, but I think it is kind of an unmissable one.
Yeah. Now, are there like real people, members of the public involved in these huge scenarios?
So it's a blend. So what we do have here are pilots. And what Fielder says is that in all of the things he's ever done, this has had the most uptake from professionals of any profession he's been looking to speak to. The most pilots have ever, you know, the pilots are the ones who have come forward in the greatest numbers. Then you also have actors, loads and loads of actors. So it also becomes kind of like a treatise on what a jobbing actor will do or will agree to do for, you know, their potential bite at stardom or their potential foothold onto the ladder to success as a performer. Because what he gets his actors to do in the show becomes increasingly outlandish. One of them is he creates this theory called the pack, where he gets, you know, let's say a pilot who's going through some romantic troubles to have a pack of 15 actors beside him who are copying his every move, every, you know, gesture, every cough, every laugh, every joke, just repeat it immediately after he says it to kind of improve his confidence as going through it. It is a really odd, odd show. And Fielder himself is a kind of unusual character because he spends most of the show standing with this laptop held in this kind of like Baby Bjorn style table thing hanging from the front of him with this manic death stare that he does. He's, you know, he is dry. He is sardonic. This is not like a punchline. This is all just about mining kind of cringe in a completely different way that I've ever seen before. And I found it kind of, I couldn't take my eyes off it, to be honest with you.
Can it be mean?
I think, well, the first season, which is really about raising children, came in for a lot of criticism for how it sort of worked with child actors and the effect that he had on his child actors. And they do acknowledge that in this season. I don't think it's mean because I think here it's, well, first of all, it's all adults. It's all people who are voluntarily involved, right? And their goal is very noble and they are mining, you know, I mean, it's kind of funny to say they're mining comedy out of the tragedy of airline disaster, but that is ultimately what they're doing in a very kind of odd and funny way. I didn't find it mean, but certainly there are times where perhaps some ethical boundaries are brushed up with, but I don't think they're ever crossed.
Yeah, okay. And kind of in the way sometimes these cringe shows can it be kind of an anxiety producing to watch.
I found the finale quite anxiety inducing, even though like I ultimately knew what was going to happen because of a lack of headlines that have come out, put it that way, right? It, you know, the absence of news was the confirmation that I knew that everything turned out okay. But in the finale, which I really don't want to spoil, because if you make it to the sixth episode, you know, you deserve the treat of what he does and the absolute painstaking efforts he makes to do this thing in the finale episode. At times I'm watching it going, oh my God, I cannot believe that this is actually happening for real. And it was the shock value that someone would have, you know, as I said, the audacity to perform, to get everyone, including insurers, to sign off on this. I don't know how they did it, but what they do is incredible stuff.
Okay, right. That's the rehearsal. We'll move on to another groundbreaking show. A group of young people share a house in New York. Wow, who'd have thought of that one? It's called Adults. You can stream the entire first season now on Disney Plus. Here's a clip.
Ooh, okay. Now I do have to go and get ready for another day as my office's resident youth expert.
Oh my God, is that still happening?
Yeah, the other day my boss asked me, what is a JoJo Siwa?
Hills, if you want to get ahead at work, you totally can, you know, like now is the time. You're kind of in the window.
Ooh, yeah, that's true.
Mm. Wait, what window?
What?
Girl, the window. Mm. You know, like the week after a sex scandal or like a race whoopsie when everyone is like terrified of all the young people in their office.
I suppose, James, you can't blame people. They're like, they're chasing the friend's dragon.
Sure, yeah, right. I mean, like, I'm sure the creators of Friends were chasing some sort of friend's dragon that pre-existed before Friends as well. It is a staple to set a sitcom with a group of 20, you know, attractive 20-somethings in a house in New York and see what happens. Now, what I liked a lot about this was it really, really grew on me. Now, this is Gen Z comedy. I am steadfastly elder millennial, so this is not my, you know, generational buzz. But I will say, I liked how audacious and ambitious it was in terms of the content matter that it covered, right? So the thing it actually mostly reminded me of is less Friends, but more Happy Endings, which is a real cult sitcom that ran for kind of 2.5 seasons and then fell apart, but people still love it. And Broad City, which is a show I rewatched recently and is a very bizarre, surreal, funny comedy. And it definitely takes that kind of approach. So we have our five people. It's the second month where we've had a sitcom involved TikTok stars or Instagram comedians getting, you know, a greenlit a series created specifically for them. And our five main people here are a bunch of, actually most, a lot of them are Canadian, one is Australian, but they are, most of them are stand-up comedians who have found fame on TikTok first. But I would say I'm not a TikTok, you know, I don't use TikTok, so this didn't put me off and it shouldn't put anyone else off, because if you're thinking there's going to be, you know, dances and 5 second comedy, it's not. It is a completely ambitious comedy because it covers really edgy material for a sitcom, and certainly stuff you wouldn't have heard the friends talking about in Central Perk. So like in the 8 episodes, they cover abortion, they cover sexual assault, they cover suicide, they cover police brutality, things like that.
Really selling it as a comedy.
Let me actually sell it, right? So yeah, these are heavy, weighty things, but obviously people joke about heavy, weighty things in everyday life. And these writers, who are the creators of the show, they're two writers for The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. And I think they find something very funny and very fresh here. It is, you know, at times it took my breath away in the kind of, in how daring the comedy was. But when the jokes landed, they were really funny. And the problem with modern sitcoms, if you compare them to something like, you know, The Golden Girls or Friends or Frasier or even The Office, they all had scores of episodes. You know, the seasons were 20 to 24 episodes long. And modern sitcoms don't get that. They get 8 episodes to find their rhythm. And it's, you know, I always think with a sitcom, part of the enjoyment of a sitcom is having the familiarity with the characters to sort of understand what way they're going to bend in a certain situation and what makes it funny if they can't. And here you have only 8 episodes to establish these characters, who are, you know, 2 women, 3 guys, 1 gay, 1 gender fluid, 1 very Gen Z, shall we say. But I found by the 8th episode, I was absolutely chuckling my way through the whole thing. And I really hope it gets renewed. And this is not a guarantee, because despite it being, as far as critically quite successful, not an absolute knockout, but in terms of viewers, it's kind of doing, well, we don't quite know because it's streaming on Hulu in the US, but very, very few new things have been renewed so far this year. And this might be another victim of it. And it would be a shame for that, because I think there's a lot of scope for this to get even better in a season 2.
And did they manage to develop the characters in the sense that, you know, all the big weighty issues you listed there that might get in the way of the character development?
It's funny to think of those things as being kind of subplots around which to build your characters. But no, I think because, well, there's only 5 of them as opposed to a traditional group of 6. There's slightly more room to develop them. Also, I thought they really understood how to pair them off with each other in ways that worked very, very well and very kind of effectively. So yeah, definitely you get a good sense of who the characters are and the archetypes that they're kind of playing into by the end of the first season. But as I said, because it's so kind of daring and chaotic as well, I feel like these archetypes could end up, you know, in the kitchen sink by season 2, and they could be starting all over again with a whole new set of who they are and what they like. But all in, I thought it was funny, I thought it was fresh, I thought it was interesting, and I'd like to see more of it.
Okay, and they're living in Queens, so it's slightly more realistic than the Friends scenario. Is that a factor that they're living in Queens or New York?
Not well, it is and it isn't. So they establish that they are living in this house in Queens, but they are living rent free because Samir, the lead, his parents have gone traveling and they're all just staying in their house while they're away. Now, where they've gone traveling is a bit unclear, and when they're coming back seems even less clear, but we'll see if it gets a season 2.
Right. Okay. Right. We'll move on to our third show. It's called Hysteria, with an exclamation mark. You can stream all of season 1 now on Paramount Plus. Here's the clip.
Chief, you got a second?
Yeah, what is it?
We got a call down at the station from a doctor. He said that his patient escaped from Smith's Grove Sanitarium. Stole a car. Could be anywhere by now.
Smith's Grove, huh?
Want to know why he was there?
Enlighten me.
For killing his teenage sister. This could be our guy, Chief.
Hey, the doctor who called, his name wasn't Loomis, was it?
You know him.
McCabe, that was a prank call. You just described the movie Halloween.
Okay, so this is Spinal Tappy, maybe?
Kind of. So this is more satanic panic than Spinal Tappy, but definitely with a little dash of Spinal Tap thrown in. So this is a one and done season. It has already been cancelled in the US. It debuted in debuted over there in October, which is a much more appropriate time of year for, you know, than the middle of the summer for us. But it comes from a creator who has worked on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia and Annabelle, the Annabelle series. And this is him cutting his teeth on a kind of schlocky horror B-movie style thing that could kind of scratch the itch in the 3-year gap between the most recent season of Stranger Things and the finale season, which is coming much later in this year. So it involves a band in Michigan, a young like teenage band in high school, who decide when they hear that the local quarterback has been kidnapped and turns up dead in what appears to be a satanic ritual, that they might be able to capitalize on the town's sudden interest and fervor for Satanism and all of the pearl clutching that goes with that. And they decide to rebrand their band as a heavy metal satanic cult worshipping band, while also not realizing at the same time that there is actually a satanic cult taking place in the town and there are really things going bump in the night, mostly in the shape of Julie Bone, who people will know from Modern Family as the matriarch of a family who gets, who falls on the wrong side of the devil's friendliness, shall we say. That's very poorly phrased. But anyway, all in, I found this to be kind of funny, but not quite getting its tone right. So it wants to be a horror, but it's kind of not quite scary enough. It wants to be a comedy, but it's not quite funny enough. The episodes drag at about an hour each, and there's 8 of them, which felt it really kind of plodded along a little bit. But as I said, if you are looking for something to scratch that Stranger Things itch in between seasons, because it's been a long 3-year wait since the last one, this will be right up your alley, because it is created by people who are aficionados of B-movie schlock horror from the 80s. It has in its cast a lot of cameo appearances by people who have been in major horror films in the last 10, 15 years. And the whole thing is styled specifically in that kind of schlocky B-movie way, which is charming to a certain degree, but for me it ran a little thin.
Yeah, well, it was cancelled, as you say. Right, so those 3 shows are The Rehearsal. You can stream the 2nd season now on Sky Comedy and Now TV. Adults, you can stream the entire 1st season now on Disney Plus. And Hysteria, you can stream all of season 1 and the only season on Paramount Plus. James Dempsey, thanks a million.
Thanks, Emil. Bye-bye.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.